Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
This episode contains explicit language. Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Monday, August 29th, the Bluey Knows Best edition. I'm Zach Rosen. I make the Best Advice Show podcast. I'm the father to two. Noah is almost five and Ami is almost two. We live in Detroit.
I'm Jamila Lemieux, a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting column and mom to Naima, who is nine, and we live in Los Angeles.
I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom to three littles, Henry, who's 10, Oliver, who's 8, and Teddy, who's 5. And we live in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Today on the show, we're going to be talking about a kids' cartoon that has amassed quite the following by kids and parents alike. That's right, we're talking about Bluey and why it's the best depiction of parenting in kids' TV today. But first, we wanted to jump into the mailbag.
Hi, friends. I just finished the episode featuring a letter from a lady who bills herself as an awkward aunt and wanted to echo the recommendation about meeting in a park and bringing adult food. For context, my same-sex partner and I are also childless by a combination of biology and choice. Two of my closest friends from college live within 30 minutes of us and both have children, both young gentlemen who are currently three. Part of the reason I listen to this podcast is so I can be a better friend to my friends with kids. Since the fall of 2021, we've been trying to get together every month for gunkle, i.e. gay uncle, brunch. My partner and I make adult food. Lobster rolls, shakshuka, quiche, crab cakes, coronation chicken, Bloody Marys, mimosas, stuff our friends want but don't often have time to make for themselves, and meet in a local park, or invite the families to our place. The boys have slowly become accustomed to us and have even started asking when we're going to do gunkle brunch again. I think it's nice for my friends because we can take turns corralling the kids when a mom or dad would like to sit back and have a conversation with another adult or eat some food that they didn't have to make. I think it's nice for the boys because they get to try new food, explore new parks, and play with our cat. My partner and I also serve as one of their primary examples of a gay couple. And it affords their parents easy entry into conversations about different families. Finally, it's nice for me because I get to see my friends. I love watching how they have structured their lives and families and how that brings them joy. It's a win-win-win. I hope Awkward Aunt is able to initiate such a relationship with her nieces and nephews. For my part, these relationships are some of the most rewarding in my life.
I want to go to a gunkle brunch. That sounds great.
Me too.
We'll come to a gunkle brunch. If you're going to make shakshuka, we'll bring a dish. Let us know. Thank you for writing. I love this. And yeah, I hope Awkward Aunt, you're hearing this and that if you haven't yet, this gives you just further courage to initiate that relationship with your family, because we're all pretty confident they're going to love it as much as you do. Thanks so much for writing. And that you're listening to the show.
That too.
We love that.
That's
it's
huge.
So cool. Yeah.
I'm always so surprised when I come across that, but really honored and flattered by it. But I think it's also, you know, something that one of my closest friends has talked about, who does not have children and, you know, is unlikely to have children, that like these bonds that you forge with your friends' kids are important because at some point, you know, you're going to be elders in need of, you know, late life care and support. Yep. And so, you know, it's really important to me that my daughter, you know, pours into these aunts and uncles that have looked after her whole life in the way that they have for her when they get older, you know, that she'll be among the people they can call on for things.
I want to mention, too, that when we posted on Facebook, we got a lot of other listener ideas. One that I thought was just so great was that someone suggested just sending things in the mail, like letters and cards, and that's a way that is completely not obtrusive, but can feel like, you know, for kids, getting something in the mail just feels magical. So I thought that was a really great suggestion. But there's a ton of them on there. So definitely go check out the Facebook group and you know, thanks everyone who submitted other ways to be involved that are not just let me take your kids.
Kids love getting mail and we love getting emails. If you have anything you want to say to us, write to us at momanddad@slate.com. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking all about Bluey.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Talking about money can be so hard, especially when the person you're talking to is still learning how to do long division. That's why Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace, is here to help. I'm Bridget, and with my fellow co-host Ryan, we help teach your little ones about complex topics like bankruptcy, climate change, and why there's so much gold at Fort Knox, and so much more. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back and joined by Philip Masiak, TV editor at the Los Angeles Review of Books, teacher at Washington University in St. Louis, and the writer of a fantastic piece we all really liked in Slate called Why TV's Best Kids Show is Also Its Best Show About Parents. Welcome to the show, Phil.
Thanks for having me. Longtime listener.
We are honored. You open the piece with this funny anecdote about your six-year-old being really excited about Bluey's season 3 release, but also that you yourself are excited about a kids show's new season being released. This struck me as very unique. What is it about Bluey that excites you so?
I mean, I hope that it's not that unique that I, as a parent, could be really invested in a particular show. But I have two daughters, 6 and 3. And the landscape of TV that they watch, a lot of it is really similar. Like, you've got the pre-K CGI landscape television shows like Daniel Tiger and Doc McStuffins and things like that. And those all kind of, you know, some of those are better than others, but they all kind of bleed into each other. And Maeve, the six-year-old, is starting to watch all of these live-action Nickelodeon sitcoms from the aughts and the teens. And those all kind of blend together. So like iCarly and The Haunted Hathaways and things like that. And the thing that I think is kind of exciting about Bluey for me as someone who is sitting on the couch or walking around while they're watching these shows is that it's a really dense show. It's got a lot happening at all levels of the screen. I think the foreground and the background are all sort of firing at the same time. And it's almost like a felt difference in the texture of the show when they're watching Bluey versus when they're watching something else.
I completely agree. It is one of the like first kid shows that I feel like I get sucked into. Like, I tend to, we don't watch a ton of TV, but when we do, it tends to be like, you go watch this because I need time, or like, we're in the hotel that a lot of our TV consumption is traveling. It's like, I just need everyone to be quiet. And I found myself with Bluey on, like, we were all ready to go to breakfast, but Bluey was on and I'm now like invested in what's happening. You know, like, but wait, we can't end this because I need to know. I need to know what happens.
For those of us who haven't seen Bluey, I did just watch my first episode in preparation for this episode. But for people who haven't seen it, just describe the backdrop for us.
So yeah, so Bluey is a show about a apparently suburban, vaguely middle-class, upper-middle-class family of blue heeler dogs living in Australia, doing the things that families do. They go to school, they go to work, they play. A lot of what every episode is about the sort of bizarre, inventive, vaguely sadistic games that the two children, Bluey and Bingo, invent to have their parents participate in. So there's a lot of game-based controlling of parents throughout the show.
And super short, right? 8 minutes-ish.
Yeah.
Because of how short the episodes are, it does something that is something I kind of associate with contemporary half-hour dramedy shows, which is that it can create these episode-long ecosystems that play out according to the confines of that episode and not a sort of pre-written or pre-decided formula, right? Every Doc McStuffins episode is the same, right? There's a toy, it's broken, Doc right. diagnoses it and fixes mm-hmm. it, right? Every episode is the same. For Bluey, there are a lot of these kind of almost all of the episodes are kind of capsule episodes. And I think one of the things that as an adult, it's easy to get drawn into is just the sort of elegance of how these individual short episodes are constructed, right? You don't always know where they're going. You're not always sure what the sort of end point of these episodes is. And there's a kind of like surprise sometimes, but also just a like formal satisfaction at the way that these episodes introduce something, you know, unusual within the space of the show and then resolve it or take it somewhere by the end.
So in your article, you write that Bluey stands out for you because there are all these phenomenal observations about, quote, not just parenting, but contemporary masculinity, the dynamics of marital arguments or squabbles, about labor distribution in modern marriages, about the social stigma of working mothers and the beatification of caregiving fathers, about things you didn't think Disney Jr. was going to tell you anything new about. That is rather impressive. But I have to say, I feel like, don't you think kids' TV has been heading in this direction for a while? Like, for years, I felt like there's been so much humor hidden in there for parents and so much stuff, you know, from like the Shrek movies to, mm-hmm. you know, the Powderpuff Girls and even Rugrats.
Absolutely. This movement of having kids TV sort of acknowledge parents as co-viewers or people in the room, you know, has been around for a long time. And it sort of really started to crest with like you're saying, Shrek and the way that Pixar movies have these sort of pop cultural references or winks of acknowledgement to parents. And the thing that I think is interesting about a show like Bluey is that it's got all of that stuff, right? It's got these winks and these little nods to parents, but it also makes the drama of parents' lives, the sort of the drama of the show itself, right? I think in ways that were kind of surprising to me, honestly, as I started to think about it and watch back through episodes, marital arguments, distribution of household labor, right? These are often the topic of the episode, yeah. right? Not just a thing that's happening in the background or not just a sort of nod or a wink from the show, but what, you know, what Bluey and Bingo, the kids are dealing with is living in a space where, they get to see their parents work these things out every day and triumph and fail, in various degrees.
Well done, Phil.
Yeah.
I know. It was a tie-in.
It's really cool. It's like three-dimensionalizing the universe for us. Unlike Daniel Tiger, which I love, Mom and Dad Tiger are just like so fucking saccharine. but they're great. They're great parents, but like we don't know anything about them, you know? The thing that struck me, and you know, I've seen one episode so far, they're earnest, but they're not saccharine. We see how fallible they are and how, you know, I can't say they're human because they're dogs, but they're whatever that word would be.
They are definitely, I mean, the episode, I think it's takeaway where they're going to get food. And it's just dad and the two kids. And it is like any outing you've ever taken to Cranky. You know, one needs to pee, one needs water. The takeout order is not right. There's like some kind of faucet on the street they're all playing with. And like every, you know, dad does not do the right thing every time. He does the right thing like a handful of times, but he makes a bunch of wrong choices too, right? It just makes for a very lighthearted but real show. Like, I'm not even joking that I tear up a bunch because I feel seen by these blue dogs.
There's a the Daniel Tiger example is a really good one, I think, because, and I've written about this before, where, you know, there's this phenomenon that I think a lot of parents do where they watch shows like Daniel Tiger or whatever, and you start to like read into things and you like spiral out and you think like, you know, you think about like how the fire department works in Paw Patrol or thing, you know, like just kind of goofy things like that. And I remember watching Daniel Tiger with my older daughter when she was younger, and in moments where Daniel Tiger is like being a brat or something, and you as a parent you're watching and you're watching Daniel Tiger's dad, and you're thinking like, is he pissed off? He looks like he might be pissed off, but of course he's not, right? In the context of the show, he's not mad, he's not impatient. And I think but you're reading that in, like, you as a parent you have to be like, well, you know, if I was talking to Daniel Striped Tiger, we could talk about the way Daniel is sometimes. But with Bluey, the sort of liberating thing about watching Bluey in this context is, you know, Bandit is pissed off, right? And you can see it. He's rolling his eyes. You know, the parents are exchanging looks. Like, the stuff that we used to have to read on to these like little kids shows are just part of the text of these shows, right? We get to see them react the way that we would react in a situation. And that's, you know, it's not revolutionary, but it's relatively rare in this kind of TV, I think.
How do your kids react to this? Do they, you know, when they're obviously enthusiastic about the show, but do they talk about the parents? I mean, I don't expect them to be like, wow, there's some really great social political commentary going on here with yourself. But I wonder, are they dialed into the fact that the parents are different here than they are on most of the shows they've been watching?
I think it comes out in a couple of different ways. One of the ways is that I think that the parents on Bluey are like regular parents, right? So I think to them, it isn't a huge, it's different from other shows they watch, but it's not different from like life, right? And the other thing I think is that, you know, one of the sort of tricks, and this is for the kids, I think, that Bluey does, is that it provides these really like ordinary type parents, but it also creates a sort of narrative universe in which they are always willing to do what their kids want to do, right?
Yeah.
That, I think, is like the trade-off, right? Which is that you get to see these parents who roll their eyes sometimes or get frustrated sometimes, but they are always committed to the bit, no matter what game they're playing. That comes out of the show, right? We have to play all of the games that are on Bluey. We play Veranda Santa. We play Born Yesterday, which is the absolute worst. It's from the new season. It's you have to pretend like you've never seen anything. Yeah. And you ask, what's that? Or what's that orb in the sky? And it's just maddening. But we play all of these games. It's fun for 30 seconds, but it goes on when you hit the 8-minute mark, I think, you know, you want the credits to roll.
In defense, mom comes up with a lot of games. And so does dad, where they get to lay still. So the show is also offering, they play Whale Watch and dad is the boat and mom is the whale. And dad's like, we're at the whale. And mom's like, you are not. You have to sail further. We, though, spend a lot of time. Shadowland is a favorite, where they you have to get from one place to the other only on shadows. And then Grannies is what has hit home here. Like these two characters they pretend to be that are old ladies, and they have to get on a bus and do all these things, but they're very slow. I think that's the thing, is that they see these parents being super willing to participate, and that's what kids think is fun.
Yeah. Always available, always willing to show affection for their kids. And I think that's what sort of ties it all up.
And they apologize a lot. That's another thing I noticed, because we talk about that a lot on the show, like just the ability that parents don't have to do it right all the time, but when we don't do it right, we can apologize. And it's a great model for that. They apologize in really loving, wonderful ways that just seem so natural.
The show takes conversations between parents really seriously, right? Whether they're just like little gestures of intimacy, or whether they're, you know, quote unquote squabbles, or whether, you know, is the case of the Facey Talk episode, like an actual fight. It takes their relationships really seriously. And I think, you know, the other thing to say is that it takes the relationship between parents and kids really seriously. And that translation, and I think you're right, the parents routinely apologizing when they, you know, do anything that they regret or feel was, you know, over the line, or, you know, act too frustrated or something like that. It's a show where the parents on the show take seriously that their kids are people, right? And so they understand if they've hurt their feelings, or they understand if they've ignored them or scared them in some way, and acknowledge that. And I think you're right. It's a good model, but it's also just a really compelling, like, narrative ecosystem where these people are people to each other, whether they're parents or kids.
I think that's a great place to leave it. I am going to watch more of this tonight with Noah. Phil, thank you so much for joining us and for your thoughtful piece. We're going to link to it in our show notes. But where can people find you otherwise? Are you a Twitter person?
I'm a Twitter person. I'm at PJ Masiak on Twitter. And I write pretty regularly for Slate and for the LA Review of Books.
Awesome. Hey, do you want to stick around for the next segment and recommend a piece of culture?
Oh, it would be such an honor. Yes.
Fantastic. Okay, we'll be right back with recommendations. Okay, it's time for recommendations. We still have our special guest, Phil Masiak, with us. Phil, you consume more TV than probably anyone I've ever met, because you get paid to do it. Do you have, and you don't have to recommend TV, but what would you like to recommend today?
So I, in the hopes that I would be invited to offer a recommendation at the end of Mom and Dad Are Fighting, I came prepared. So it's kind of a dual recommendation, and it took place over the course of the pandemic. At the beginning of the pandemic, we got a subscription to our local newspaper, which is the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We live in St. Louis. And at that time, my daughter, my eldest daughter, Maeve, was in pre-K. She was just starting to learn how to read. And what we started doing at the beginning of the pandemic is that we would read the comics together, the newspaper comics, the syndicated ones. So she really likes Pickles, which is about an elderly couple. She really likes Sally Forth, which is about, like, middle-aged parents. She likes Baby Blues, which is about parents of a little baby. And we read it, and we read it every day, and I would read it with her, and we would, like, work through it. And over the course of the pandemic, and it happened almost imperceptibly to me, she, like, learned how to read and now just reads the comics every morning. Like, it's just a regular thing. If we forget to bring in the paper, she asks me to go out and get it for her. She stays up on Sally Forth. She stays up on things like that. And it's both really useful for the kids and really fun. And she gets invested in the little story arcs, and I get to, you know, do something I haven't done in a really long time. So, newspaper comics, that's my recommendation.
Amazing.
I love this.
So cool.
So I'm recommending some geography-based learning stuff. The first is an app for kids called Stack the States. It's available on both Google Play and Apple. And this fun little game has you, you're going to learn, like, state capitals, but also little facts about the states, the United States, and where they fit in the country. And you get to see if you can stack the states that you have guessed correctly in a tower and get it to balance, which is kind of fun. And I have been amazed how much even the five-year-old has just learned from this. Like, a lot of the little landmarks are going to be national parks and things like that. But we're always trying to give them kind of a sense of the larger world. There is also a stack the countries, but we started with stack the states because we were so into license plates this summer. So this was a good little segue. And then I was thinking, like, okay, well, what can I do to brush up on some geography as well? And found this little online game called Global. And it's sort of, I think, inspired by Wordle, but basically you are presented with the world and you type in a country and it tells you if you're hot or cold, and you keep trying to guess countries until you guess the country of the day. So it's a little geography lesson. I was really stumped yesterday because we were in the Caribbean and I, one, don't know the countries there. And two, even after I got out the map, was, like, trying to figure out what to type in, like, because a bunch of them, you know, are like former colonies. And like, so does that count as France? Anyway, it took me like 14 guesses yesterday, but it is a really great way to just hone in some of your geography skills, and it's fun and the kids can play too. And that's just online. And we will link to both of those, of course, in the show notes.
Solid. Jamila, what do you got?
So I'm at this point in my life, I would call myself a social drinker. You know, I keep a little booze in the house, but I very rarely drink it. So I really only drink when I go out. And, you know, I can't party like I once did. I've found that, you know, two cocktails is usually fine. Three could be fine. But, you know, it doesn't take too much for me to feel a little bubbly these days, and which is fine in the moment. But then there's always the matter of the next day. You know,
sure.
The times that I've made it to three or four drinks usually have not fared so great for me in the morning. And I was in Atlanta this weekend for a conference, and I went to a party with one of my friends, a couple of my friends from college. We went to brunch. We went to a day party. We're at the day party. We're like literally like 6 to 11 o'clock. We partied and we drank all day. And I was so afraid. I was like, oh my God, I'm flying back home the next day. I have a meeting in the morning. You know, I haven't done this in years. And my girl gave me something called Cheers Hydrate, which is like an electrolyte powder mixture that is supposed to help you the next day after drinking. And sure enough, after drinking vodka, of all things, 4 hours, one scoop of this powder and some water. And the next morning I woke up and I was like 97% fine.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wait, so you took it the night before?
I took it the night before.
Wow.
So
it's a miracle.
It's a miracle. I'm recommending it very strongly. Cheers Hydrate powder. Yes. If you want to have a couple of drinks, if you don't do it like you used to, you will be back.
They would be
a
perfect sponsor.
They would be a great sponsor. Like, are you drinking after 30?
Do you have children that wake up at 6, regardless of how late you were?
Regardless of what you were doing. Yeah.
Oh, this is great.
I'm really
helpful. Thank you.
I ordered a jar of it for myself immediately.
I love this.
Sweet. Okay, my recommendation is the music of local Detroit troubadour Joe Riley. We saw him live in Detroit this week at a children's festival. He does like environmental kind of nature, go outside, get off your iPad songs, but not in a didactic way. It's really clever and funny. He integrates a lot of kind of rapping into his folk songs, and Noah was just transfixed. This may have been like her first proper concert, and she was singing along and has since been like asking to listen to one of his songs in particular called Turkey Vulture. Before going to bed, and this morning on the way to camp, she freestyled in the kind of mode of Joe Riley the whole time. It's so great. We return to this notion a lot of trying to get our kids to listen to good stuff rather than lame kid stuff, and Joe Riley is great. Similar to Bluey, great for kids and adults. Check him out.
He's playing at the Grand Rapids Public Library.
Oh yeah, he's all around.
That makes me love him even more.
Yeah, he's wonderful. That's it for our show. We'll be back in your feeds on Thursday, so be sure to tune in. While you're at it, please subscribe to the show and give us a rating and review on Apple or Spotify. This episode of Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Christy Taiwo Macanjula, Anna Phillips, and Rosemary Belson. For Jamila Lemieux and Elizabeth Newcamp, I'm Zach Rosen. Thanks for listening.